This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, special guest, ranking member, Senate Ag Committee, Dr. John Bozeman. First off, Brad Rippey, meteorologist with USDA.
From a livestock perspective, the warmer and drier than normal conditions across the north tend to be a positive. Now, it's interesting that we're talking about this in the context of winter, December through February. But in the next few days, we're actually going through a significant early season snowstorm across the northern plains. So it shows you that even amid an overall warmer and drier than normal pattern, you can still have these temporary anomalies like what we're seeing across the northern plains that can create quite a bit of stress on livestock and really make travel and rural travel quite difficult at times. So it doesn't mean a clean pass with warm, dry conditions, but it does mean that if you look at the overall cold season as a whole, it tends to be a little bit easier than normal across the north.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, today joined by the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, Senator from Arkansas, the Honorable Dr. John Bozeman. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I like the introduction is the doctor part. That's a respected profession. I think, we're probably at about an 18% approval rating in Congress now. So, again, like I say, I appreciate the doctor, John.
Well, there's been a lot going on in Washington, D.C., especially on Capitol Hill, and even more especially in the other chamber. And what would you say at this point about what's happening in D.C. and where we're going?
Well, I think we've actually stabilized a little bit now that we've got the new speaker in place. The hope is that we can go forward and really start working on some of the problems that you've described. The debt, the deficit. In other words, we have a $33 trillion debt, but we're also running these $1 trillion-plus deficits every year, adding to the debt. And so spending really is something that we have to control. It's okay to borrow some money, but it gets to the point where it becomes unhealthy, and we're approaching that right now. So that's going to take everybody working together, and at some point we're going to need to tighten things up and go from there.
So a big question is, we've known the issue is coming for quite some time. Will Congress really have the appetite to deal with the issue?
Well, I think necessity is the mother of invention. And so we've been talking about this for a long time. But now, because of these high interest rates that are really hurting individuals so much, that have come about suddenly, the same thing is happening to the government. So, yeah, I think there will be an appetite, and we're going to have to explain to the public why we need to do these things. Although they're pretty wise, they will understand. And I think ultimately, and we're a ways off from this, but ultimately the way that you solve this problem is to go to the same method that our states have. Almost every state in the union has a balanced budget amendment. We don't need to necessarily balance our budget, but we need a spending amendment in place that makes it such that we can't borrow over what's deemed a healthy amount. You know, we all borrow money to make money and things. That's okay. We borrow money sometimes for things that we need, but you have to have the ability to pay that back. And so ultimately, I think that's the fix. Until then, we need to work together to do our very best and just simply do the job of cutting back on spending. We've got all kinds of things going on in the world, though, that make that difficult. We could talk about Israel. We could talk about Ukraine. We could talk about the fact that, we're running out of munitions. The whole world is. The number one thing that we should be spending on should be defense. And so that's because of the dangerous situation we have in the world. Defense is going to cost more money.
Well, this is all coming as the 2018 Farm Bill has expired. And even though it's not a cliff necessarily for producers right now, they will be talking with bankers and lenders soon. 23 Farm Bill, what can you tell us?
Well, because of, being late in the appropriations process, the things that have gone on in the the House, trying to get, you know, some stability there. And then making sure, you know, that we have plenty of farm in the farm bill. It's taking us a while. So myself and Senator Stabenow have been working together to make sure that, as you said, that the farmers have the ability to know that a farm bill is in place for the next year. They need that, but they for themselves, but they also need it, as you pointed out, when they go down and talk to their banker. The banker needs to know that there is a way, based on crop insurance, ARC, PLC, all of the risk management tools, that they have the ability to pay that loan back. So we're visiting with leadership now, talking about an extension for a year to hook this on to the continuing resolution that will happen around the week before Thanksgiving. And just making sure that this is in place. It doesn't mean it's going to take us a year to get a farm bill done. Hopefully we'll get it done shortly after the first of the year. It might be longer. But it's just something that we can put in our back pocket and take some of the pressure off of us. But more importantly, take the pressure off the farm community, knowing that, that we've worked hard to make sure that the current programs go on.
There are some, though, that are looking for some changes to that 23 farm bill that could cost additional money. So in this time that we've been talking about, how do we move forward?
Well, the farm bill now, if you go back to 2018, the farm bill scored at about $868 billion. That swelled into $1.5 trillion. Almost all of that's nutrition, and nutrition's important. But out of $1.5 trillion, surely we can get, a little bit of money to support our farm community. Right now, it's about $1.2 trillion for nutrition, $1.2 trillion for nutrition, and about $300 billion for anything that has to do with rural America and farmers. So, I think there's lots of rooms for us to shuffle things around a little bit without hurting any of the programs. To make sure that our farmers are up to date. And you have a situation where the risk management tools, because of inflation, because it's a different world than it was a couple of years ago when this started, having the ability to have risk management tools that actually work for farmers. We've seen a huge reset in the labor market. Every business is operating differently now. Their expenses have gone up. Their insurance has gone up. We need to make sure those kind of things regarding risk management are up to par right now, up to date, so that our farmers can carry on. The other thing is that this is important for the farm community, but what's important for the farm community is so important for the average American. We've seen what high food prices have done. You don't really realize it. When you look back over the last 2 years, I think the price of Halloween candy now is, and that's a little thing, but it's, the world now is full of little things. In the last 2 years, it's gone up 27%, 13 or 14% this last year, and then 13 or 14% the year before. But when you add all that up, like I say, you're in the 27% range, and that's the most popular, holiday for kids outside of Christmas. So things like this, it's not just Halloween candy. It's everything that we eat, everything we consume, and it really is making a huge impact on Americans right now trying to feed their families. But what happens if because of the policies that we don't get done contribute to another 27%? Where's the breaking point? So the decisions that we make are really critical, and we're working really hard to make sure that farmers have the ability to continue to give us the cheapest, safest food supply of any place in the nation. I think the average percent of what Americans pay for their food is like 12%, something like that. And don't hold me exactly, but the average throughout the world is about 25% of your income, your take home pay. So this is, these are big things.
We're almost to the end of our time, but hate to let you go without talking about recycling and textile recycling. What's been happening on that front?
Well, recycling is such low-hanging fruit. We talk about, rightfully so, we talk about the environment, how important it is to protect it, and just, making it such that the packaging is appropriate so we don't fill up landfills with extra packaging, all the different things that everybody's working on. But making it such, too, that consumers can understand what we can recycle and what we can't. One of the things that people don't realize is the impact of apparels. And we're a throwaway society. You get tired of these things. And China used to take a bunch of this stuff. They've cut us off from doing that. So now clothing is winding up in landfills. And there's a lot of people that need good clothing. And so we had a hearing saying, how can we do a better job? How can we support, as a Congress, how can we encourage, how can we incentivize, encourage people to start recycling clothes? And it turns out there's a number of different ways. One of the things is that there's a number of businesses that have come up, and a lot of the clothes, I know, my daughters, as their kids outgrow stuff, and it seems like they grow so rapidly that, of course, they buy, or it's bigger to begin with, but before you know it, they've outgrown it, and the clothes are still in good shape, and somebody else could benefit from that with, quality clothes at a low price. So people are filling that gap, and that's a good thing, especially in the economy that we've got going on right now. So there's a number of different ways that we can do that. The other thing, and I'm so pleased, they talked about, we had people that represented manufacturers, things like that, the whole gamut of the industry. They're making clothes where they actually last longer, where you if you aren't outgrowing things that you can actually put on, especially if you're a guy and you have a job that, entails wearing, or, boys are so hard on clothes anyway. But making it such that they last longer because they're making them more durable. These are all, all of these things are little things that combined really will have an impact on waste and disposal, and ultimately have a big impact on the environment.
The ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, the Honorable Dr. John Bozeman, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Life doesn't come with guarantees. But working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Senator John Bozeman, ranking member, Senate Ag Committee.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
From the Iowa State Capitol building in Des Moines Thursday evening.
After winning her own fight against cancer, Heidi was inspired to create a nonprofit organization, Roots of Peace, to battle an insidious cancer of the earth by replacing the remnants of war with bountiful farmland.
World Food Prize Foundation President Terry Branstad and other dignitaries, among those celebrating the awarding of what is dubbed the Nobel Prize of Agriculture to the 2023 laureate, Heidi Kuhn.
I believe this is a moment in human history, for the removal of a landmine and the planting of a grapevine or tree of life is an act of peace.
Also announced at the ceremony by Ambassador Branstad, a change in the World Food Prize award amount. Originally at $250,000.
Effective immediately, the World Food Prize has increased to a $500,000 award.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.